We're here with Corey Reese, the author of Nowhere Near First, contributing author in Ultra Running Magazine, an overall good guy, ambassador to
Tailwind Nutrition, one of our favorite products.
And that's one of our topics today. We were talking about self-supported runs, about aid stations. How many items are on an aid station when you go up to help give you the things that you need? But Corey has developed his own strategies at his personal aid stations. Corey.
Yeah, I really like Tailwind. Before I started using Tailwind, it was kind of guesswork on trying to figure out where I was going to get the calories and the electrolytes. And a lot of times later in races, nothing sounds good. You're not hungry. And Tailwind is great because it's easy on the stomach. It's not super sweet. And you don't have any of that guesswork. You just add the Tailwind mix to your bottle or your pack, and as long as you're drinking, you're getting the calories and the electrolytes you need. So it really takes all of that guesswork out of it.
You know, the one thing that I really appreciate, besides of what Corey just said, is it mixes so easily. Usually some of those other products you shake up, and you take a squirt and you get a big old puff of powder in your mouth, which is disturbing.
Or a gooey mess.
or a gooey mess.
It's so good that it's just not for the trail. Corey, do your kids, because you have some young kids, do they drink Tailwind by choice?
They do like the Tailwind. They know where my stash is, and I always have to wonder when they've got their cup there. It looks clear, and it looks so delicious. Is that just water, or have they gotten into my stash of Tailwind?
Hey, Corey, have you ever mainlined Tailwind? I have a friend sitting across a table that likes to take spoonfuls of it.
It's delicious.
Corey, we are brothers, and very nice.
Hey, yep. you can go check out Tailwind Nutrition at tailwindnutrition.com, or you can go to our partners page and link on over. They are great supporters of the community, and it's a great, great product.
Go to tailwindnutrition.com.
Penn State World Campus can be found at worldcampus.psu.edu.
It can be found anywhere, anytime that you need it. You just open up the internet and bang, you're sitting in the classroom.
You know, Penn State is ranked as one of the top 10 online campuses. They have over 125 undergraduate and certificate programs that are available.
It's just the direction education needs to go. This typical brick and mortar that you go to and you sit down, you find parking, and you pay extraordinary fees to get to do it.
You have to be in class at the same time, regular. This online, you can do it at your leisure. You can do it if you're working full time. You can do it with your family. It's very flexible.
It sets a good example for those around you. Maybe your kids are watching you get your degree that you were just short of, because sometimes life gets right in front of you.
Or if you want to try something new and get more additional education.
Or how about the guy, Scott, that gets promoted because he did sit in that class, and you know you're better than that joker.
Go to worldcampus.psu.edu, and you can find out more about it, get with a counselor, and see how Penn State's World Campus can make you better.
Oh, welcome to this. Oh, it's you, Scott.
Hey, you know what? We've done some renovation in the store. I just want to tell you, you did a really good job on these new hardwood floors.
Did you notice that, Scott?
I did. Yeah. They're nice and waxed. Yeah. It makes it so that it's easy to clean up.
I had some help from AJW after he was done sampling his beers over there. He came over. He's pretty good at this stuff.
Is that why over there in the corner the planks are a little crooked?
It drifts a bit, yes.
Hey, we just want to make sure everybody's aware of the sale that we have going on for the new grand opening of the TRN store. If you go to trailrunnernation.com, hit the store link, you can get 15% off all of that great gear. We still have hoodies, hats, arm sleeves, buffs. What are you doing, Freeman?
I'm helping you. I'm showing you that we have shirts.
Oh, is that the universal language for shirts?
In every language available.
Don't forget we have the PEK, the performance-enhancing Cocapelli temporary tattoos. We have some window decals. We have a lot of stuff in the store. It's all 15% off through the end of February.
Ladies and gentlemen of the wide, worldwide ultra running community, you are listening to nothing less than the greatest trail running nation podcast on earth. It is the Trail Runner Nation podcast.
The problem with the message above is that it flies in the face of what we know to be true.
No, I've listened to your podcast for many years, and it's, yeah.
I do own my own bar. every Friday morning on I Run Far, we open up and open up the taps.
You're recording this, aren't you, Freeman?
I get everything.
Thanks for joining another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Scott Warr.
And I'm Don Freeman.
And today on today's podcast, we have Fast Corey. He's really fast.
Well, that's hence the name, Scott.
I think there's some irony there, isn't there, Corey?
There is a little bit of irony, a lot of irony.
If you don't know who Fast Corey is, we're talking to Corey Reese. He's a phenom runner out of southern Utah that we are talking to today.
I'm holding in my hand a book that he has written called Nowhere Near First, Ultramarathon Adventures from the Back of the Pack, written by Corey Reese with a phenomenal picture on the front. And I believe, well, Corey's been on the podcast before, and you've called him out on some of these pictures, Scott.
He actually, I think there's a video of him taking a picture of jumping that I really enjoyed. He's not really jumping as high as it looks. It looks like Michael Jordan.
Part of that is the camera angle. So usually I'm just out running on my own, and so I'll just set the camera down on the ground. And when you set it down on the ground, it may add a few inches to your jump.
Or in some of the areas that you're taking with these cameras and canyons, it looks like maybe a mile or two to your jump, Corey.
Hey, I want to just mention something. You know, you have an endorsement on the front of this book from Dean Karnassus, Corey. What the heck? Have you met Dean?
I have not met Dean in person. I have kind of gotten to know him a little bit through, because he writes for Ultra Running Magazine also, and So I've kind of gotten to know him a little bit through that. Actually, my first acquaintance with him was years ago. I ran a 100-miler on a high school track, and one of the things that I did during the night, I was tired and having a hard time staying awake and hungry, and so Domino's Pizza was across the street from the track, and so my son was there with me, and so we took a little mid-run jaunt over to Domino's Pizza and ate a pizza in the middle of the 100-miler, and it made me think of Dean's book, Ultramarathon Man, and how he ate a mid-run pizza. And so I just posted something on Facebook, and somehow Dean saw that picture and sent a message saying how cool he thought it was, so... He's awesome.
Hey, do you get to count those miles that you run across the street? Because I've got to think.
I did count that 0.1 mile across the street and back.
I would say that was a getting lost on the trail. He kind of made a divergence. Whoa, I was supposed to be taking lefts this whole time, and yep. I made a right.
Hey, Corey, you've run a lot of organized runs and 100 miles as some of the distance, 50 miles, you know, every distance you can think of, but one of the things that really intrigues me about Corey is he does these self-generated, self-created 100-mile runs where he just all of a sudden goes out. And I guess there's not a problem with a lottery with those because you're creating them yourself. But talk to us a little bit about these self-made 100-milers.
It's my only way to get a podium finish is if I'm the only one running. No, I just think it's kind of fun to, I really, really love the race environment and being with other runners, but I also kind of like the challenge of doing my own thing and coming up with something different and unique to keep me occupied. So I think I've done maybe 5 or 6 solo 100-milers and I really love them. I like how the race starts whenever you want it to start. You can sleep in if you want to. You don't have the pressure of cutoffs. The aid station always has exactly what you want because you make the aid station. So, yeah, it's been fun.
Well, let's talk about the different ones. I mean, you mentioned the one running around a track for 100 miles. I think there was one that you ran from St. George up to Salt Lake or something like that, as I
recall. Was one. I started one in Salt Lake, downtown Salt Lake, and then ran 50 miles south to Provo, Utah, and then back up. And so I just ran on the streets, and I didn't plan anything along the way. I just used gas stations for my aid stations, and it worked out. It worked out great. I loaded up on Snickers and Mountain Dew every once in a while, and it worked out good. So that was a fun one. The most recent one I did was on a trail here in southern Utah called the Moore Cowbell Trail. And I just feel like that's the most awesome name for a trail ever, and that it needed to have a 100-miler there. So the loop is only, it's a loop, and it's only about 3.5 miles long. Oh. But it's overlooking... You see Zion National Park in the background, and you're running along the edge of mesas. It's just so, so pretty. And so I just did that loop for 100 miles.
So let's think you're into the 20th loop, or is it still pretty? Or do you just go, more of this vistas and mesas? I'm sick of this.
It probably started to get a little less pretty the more loops I got into it, you know, when your brain starts getting a little foggy and the scenery isn't quite as important to you anymore. You just want to get to the finish line.
Let me ask you this question. Do you find it more difficult to do an organized run or a self-created run?
My experience with the self-created runs, I would say they're harder mentally, mm-hmm. because you don't have the support of the other runners around you. You don't have people at the aid station kicking you out, and it means nothing. Like, you didn't pay anything for it. No one cares whether you do it or not. And so you have to have that internal motivation to keep going when things start to suck.
Do you post on Facebook that's, you know, to bring some attention to it, or you do it incognito so that it's reported afterwards?
Let's see. I'm trying to think back on all of them. Usually, I think on all of them, I'll post something a day or two beforehand, just saying this is what I'm planning to do. And that's been kind of cool because I haven't enlisted any help from anyone. I try to not bother anyone, but it's been cool when I've posted something. I've had a bunch of friends come out to run some of the miles with me, and actually, some of them have run lots of miles with me, so it's kind of fun to share the experience with other people.
How much planning do you put into this? It seems like to me, from the outsider reading some of your Facebook stuff, that you just decide you're eating dinner one night and you go, you know what, I think I'm going to go run around a track 100 times. you know, is that the planning, or is there a lot more planning that goes into it with maps? And
Wait a second. I want to interject, because here's what I think really happens. Corey's wife says, you know, tomorrow's Saturday and we're cleaning out the garage.
I need you to mow the lawn.
We're mowing the lawn.
Oh, I can't.
I'm doing this 100-mile run.
You have no idea how many garage cleanings this has gotten me out of. No, it really is pretty casual. And most of the 100-milers that I've done have either been loops, or I'll just park at a central trailhead that branches off to a bunch of different trails. And so I intentionally keep it really casual and try to do runs that don't require a lot of planning.
You know, tell us a little bit about, I mean, you live in a pretty remote area, Hurricane. So I got that right, didn't I?
You did.
Hurricane, Utah.
Yep.
Yeah. But it is kind of the gateway to a lot of the national parks down there. Tell us about the ability that you have just to walk out your back door and go run some of these just amazing vistas.
Yeah, you guys have no idea. This area is the mecca of trail running, and I think a lot of people just don't know it yet. I'm a few minutes away from Zion National Park, and Bryce Canyon is pretty close. Grand Canyon is pretty close. But even outside of those national parks, just within a 50-mile radius, there are hundreds of miles of just incredible trails all around here.
How were those trails formed? Are they horse trails or?
The mountain biking scene is pretty big around here. They're so awesome at creating trails, and I think it's to their credit that so many of the trails are around. The trail running scene isn't as big around here. There aren't too many trail runners, but mountain bikers are really active here, so they've created tons of trails.
So read that quote that you had in your book. There's a quote near the end of the book that Don and I were discussing before we started a recording that I think is just amazing. I was going to claim it as my favorite quote and really be mean to Don, because I always am, but I decided to give him cred this time.
Yeah, so I'm getting credit for reading something I didn't write.
Exactly.
Thanks, Scott. Thanks for leaving me the crumbs. Anyway, on page 178 of the book, number 9, it says, you are capable of so much more than you know. Think about what you would do, what you would want to accomplish if you had no limits. Now go do it. You can. It's okay to be scared, but challenge yourself to live big. Take a step beyond the line of what is comfortable. Do something your grandchildren will brag about. Turn off the television. Get off the couch. Go out and do something awesome, because you, yes, you are awesome. That makes me want to go run around my building 100 miles.
run up and down the hall?
Anything.
Where does that come from, Corey?
I think it comes from a fear that I have of getting to the end of a year or getting to the end of my life and being like, what did I accomplish? What did I do? What do I have to show for the last month or the last year? I don't want to look back and say, I didn't do anything cool. I got through a season of this TV show. Like, that's not exciting. That's boring. And I think it's so easy for us to just get trapped in the day-to-day living and the pattern where we wake up in the morning and do the same thing and then go to bed, and the next day we do the same thing again. I think it's important to have something that sparks you and gets you excited, that you want to go do something awesome.
And even a little bit of fear into it as well. You said it's okay to be scared. You know, it's some of the things that are worthwhile, or there's risk involved in it. So it's totally, absolutely fine to enter with a little bit of uncertainty. And that's what makes adventure. That's part of the definition, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to make the comment that you talk about coming to the end of your life and looking back. There are periods in our life that we only have this opportunity, this fitness level or this health, or both of our knees are good, or whatever it might be, that the choice can be taken away from you. And to squander those opportunities along the way could be a mistake and one that you would regret. So why we can, we should.
Yeah, I totally agree. I was at a book signing at the St. George Marathon Expo this past October, and I had a guy come up to me and say that he was a really active runner, and he went to a routine checkup and they found a few things, and then he had to go to another doctor, and his heart doctor said, "I'm sorry, you can't run anymore." And he said it was taken away from him literally overnight. And I just think I want to suck the most I can out of this whole experience right now, so that if that happens to me tomorrow or next year or in 5 years, I won't have any regrets. I want to take full advantage of the time that I've got.
But we need to measure those efforts too. You know, we did our audio magazine podcast a couple weeks back where we said take a break or break. And if you don't, you know, if you try to do it all at once and consume everything, you're not going to have that longevity that you're looking for. So measured efforts
for
is
sure
important too.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't want to burn yourself out, or definitely you don't want to do anything that's going to risk injury. So yeah, it's a fine line for sure.
But we don't want to clean the garage either.
That's not cross training.
No, it's not.
So the book that we're talking about, that Corey's written, is called Nowhere Near First. And I got to say, it sounds like you must have had some help writing this, because it's some pretty good prose, Corey. But it's
you don't think he could do it, Scott?
No, I do. But I mean, as I was reading some of these, I was thinking, man, that's good writing. That's not just good story, but it's a good writing. But the one thing that was interesting to me is, and I think that there's a lot of us out there that can relate to this, is how you got started in and were tempted to do that first St. George Marathon. Mm-hmm. You know, I know Don's story. Don knows my story. You know, we weren't like some of those elite athletes that ran in middle school and became an awesome cross-country star in high school and then went on to college and got a scholarship to run cross-country in college and then made the leap into trail running. You know, most of us made it through high school or even college and hated running. And that's yeah. that's where you came. What enticed you to finally say, I want to try that?
Well, the St. George Marathon is huge in our area, and every year the day after the marathon they have big stories and feature cool runners and post lots of beautiful pictures, and for years I would look at that day after the marathon issue of the newspaper and think, one of these days I want to do that. That looks really cool. And so it took a few years of working up to it. But I think that first marathon was in 2009, and I just fell in love with the whole aspect of pushing yourself and doing something that's hard. And now it's developed into this
obsession.
Yes.
You know, one of the themes of this book that I enjoy is the whole idea that pretty much anybody can do this. And it's something that I believe because I do it and I love it. And the theme that I get out of your book is it doesn't matter your body type, whether you liked running or not, if it's something that you are setting a goal to do, it's something that's very attainable. And there's going to be some hard times and some suffering, but it can be attainable. When, at one point did you, I know that in the book you described the first time that you started training for the St. George Marathon was not mm-hmm. good and
yeah.
you got put on hold. Can you talk to a little bit about that hiccup?
Yeah, before I became a runner, I was having issues with my knees, and I remember going and getting a few x-rays and you know, things were not aligned perfectly with my knees, and then when I started running, I think I just didn't know my body very well and probably didn't train very smart, and so I actually started training for the marathon 2 years before I started. I tried to run the marathon twice, but just didn't get very far in my training before my knees hurt so bad that I had to stop training. And so it was the third year when I finally figured it out. And so now I think I think that my knees are stronger than they were back before I was a runner, because I've worked on strengthening the muscles and stuff around them and being smarter with my training and avoiding injury at all costs. So I think running definitely hasn't hurt my knees. If anything, it's made them stronger.
Corey, what in the world are you thinking? I mean, you tried doing this and your knees are hurting and to the point where you can't run anymore. What is motivating you to say, no, I think I can pull out of this. I think because there's so many people out there. I hear it all the time where they say, oh, you know, I wish I could go do that, but I have bad knees.
Right,
my knees
right.
hurt mm-hmm. when I run.
The doctor
well,
told me not to
so
run.
Did mine when okay. I first started. So what
yeah.
got you through that hill of saying, yeah, my knees hurt, but I'm going to get over it?
Well, I think that I took more advantage of local runners and resources and spent time at the local running store getting advice and getting that assurance that you can do it if you really want to. And so I credit the local runners with helping me build that confidence to keep trying. And I think that is applicable to all of us. I mean, when we're looking at long races or ultra marathons, sometimes it takes a while, and sometimes there's going to be some DNFs along the way before you you get where you want to go, but you can get there.
I can recall back when I ran my first 11-mile distance, which I thought was amazing because I didn't know anybody that had ever run 11 miles. So I really thought that was probably a maximum effort for humanity, is what I thought at the time. And I was certain of that because one of my knees was swollen when I was done. I mean, it was puffy, and I thought, man, I know man shouldn't run 11 miles based on my experience here with this knee that's blown up.
Caveat. Caveat. That is the same exact words that Don used this last year when he ran the Tahoe 200. When I met him at the aid station at 106, he looked at me in this solemn face and said, "Scott, man is not designed. We're not supposed to run more than 100 miles." And now he signed up for another one.
So I just encourage...
I just
encourage those that do experience some of those limitations, that it really means don't start so fast, work up to it, reassess the situation, but don't throw in the towel.
Right.
Just because you approach an obstacle, you need to rethink, you know, around it, over it, through it, something. But I'm glad I didn't quit at that point.
And per Corey's example right there, go talk to some other runners. I have yet to meet an ultra runner or trail runner that is not willing to share advice.
Right.
And so, if you're having troubles, go to the local running store. If you don't know any runners, or go up to the trailhead and find somebody and say, "Hey, can I ask you a question?" And they're willing to help.
Yeah, don't ask your doctor.
No. That's the wrong person to ask.
That person does not know what's good for your health. let's talk about your metaphor of spreading peanut butter on a piece of bread.
Yeah.
I love that one.
Yeah, I actually first heard that from Bryce Thatcher, who owns Ultraspire. And he was talking about how that's important with race strategy because it's so easy to go out really fast and burn yourself out. And so he said you need to think about it like spreading some peanut butter across a piece of bread. You wanna just keep an even exertion level through the whole race. And so you don't want one side of your bread completely covered in peanut butter and then you run out on the other side of the piece of bread. So I mean, anyone who has run ever, I think, has experienced that horrible feeling of being mid-race and saying to themselves, "Uh-oh, I'm in trouble. I'm out of peanut butter." So I think really that ability to pace yourself comes with practice, and I think I learned it the hard way after many hard experiences where it's like, okay, I gotta go really slow in the beginning. I need to be okay with watching everyone fly down the trail and going at my own conservative pace. And I really like the advice of thinking to yourself early on in the race, am I gonna be able to go this fast at the end? And if not, then I need to slow down. And I remember, gosh, I've heard that advice from you guys and the people you've interviewed for years, and it's so true.
Do you think that there's anybody that is out there running ultras that has not had to learn that lesson the hard way?
Yeah, that was going to be my comment too, Scott, as we were competing with hand signals, who's going to say the next thing? Because inevitably, it's going to be about the same comment. I'm not sure you can learn that lesson just from reading or talking or listening to a podcast. I think you have to go out there and
get experience
and make a mistake, because how else do you know?
Yeah.
It's not like touching the burning hot stove. I mean, you can listen to your parents and go, "Oh, that is hot. Oh, I can feel the heat. I'm not going to touch it."
Yeah.
In ultra running, this is one thing where you got to touch the stove.
I'm not sure that you learn that the stove is hot or where, how close you can get to it until you've made that mistake. Mm-hmm. You learn different cues that come up. You know, the cramping of the legs, the stomach goes, you know, negative chatter in your head, you name it, a blister forms. All the little things that will take you out from going too fast. So I don't know if blisters form because you go too fast, but maybe because you don't take the time to get the rock out. I can come up with a rationale behind that statement. Don't worry. I'll come up with something.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what I love about this book is it moves quick. There's a lot of chapters, a lot of topics, and it's really fun to read the title of the chapter and kind of guess where he's going with it. And then he pushes you right through it.
And the aid stations are very close together. They're not long chapters. You can eat it in bite-sized pieces. And very good titles to the chapters. There's one that I was interested in. Tell us what's in the chapter called "It's Fun to Impress the Opposite Sex."
I think that was from the Buffalo Run. There's a race on Antelope Island in the middle of the Great Salt Lake, and in this waiver that you sign for the race, you sign something saying I realize that this is a dumb hobby and I risk getting injured, I might die, but hey, it impresses the opposite sex. And it also talks about that waiver also talks about there are buffaloes out on that island, and how he writes about how you need to, if you come across one, don't make eye contact and try and keep your distance away, and sometimes they will charge you, and not with a credit card, and have a clean pair of shorts packed in your drop bag just in case. So,
that may be one of the most creative waivers I've ever heard of.
Yeah, you sign it and you think, oh boy, what am I getting myself into? I'm paying for this.
have you thought about any other type of endurance activities, kayaking or, you know, mountain biking, or is it running that really, really is appealing to you?
I have always thought that running was totally where my heart is at. Thinking long term down the road, if something happens where I'm not able to run anymore, I read this book by Jill Homer called Be Brave, Be Strong. She's an amazing mountain biker and a runner too. Anyway, she wrote this book about a race that she did where they started up in at the border of Canada and the US, and then it rides down to the border of Mexico, just all across the country. And the way that she described it sounded so much like ultra running, where you're out yourself all alone for a long time without seeing anyone, and you have to plan and you have to be okay with suffering. And just the way that she described it, I could see myself doing some of that endurance mountain biking down the road.
Yeah. I think I just enjoy running so much that I haven't wanted to try something different. I'm content, you know, with the trail. Yeah. There's a lot of trails I haven't seen, and there's climbing, and there's descents, and there's bad water that you've done that we haven't talked about. There's just so much to do on your feet that I don't think, you know, getting a kayak is really in my to-do list right now.
Shoes are cheaper too.
Yes.
And until Ultra starts making doggone kayaks, I'm sticking on the trail.
There you go.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. Scott, you distract me sometimes from my critical thoughts.
How did I distract you?
I don't know. You said something. I was out on the, you know, on the road, not running. I was traveling somewhere, and I was at a gas station type stop, and it was kind of a remote area, and there was a bicycle race going on, long distance endurance stuff. I know that because I'd been driving for a long time, and I saw bikes for a long time. And they all had numbers on them, and they were definitely geared up for this long event. And I had stopped, and a couple of them were going by, and I was just—I felt like such a relationship or like a cousin tribe to them. Just I recognized what they were doing and how the pain that was on their face, or just, you know, midday. I know they'd been out all morning, and I wanted to do that. I wanted to go out there and give them a hug. I just wanted to be part of their experience. I just felt like I was part of them, and I just I realized that that other endurance community, there's a close relationship to us, and I really, really admired that group going by. I thought I just was a big fan. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that means. But when there's
there's certainly similarities with the suffering and being at the edge where you think you can't go any farther and yet you still have a long ways to go. So I think they can identify with what we feel, and we can identify with where they go through.
And I know that when I had yelled over, you know, what are you doing? How long is your race? And I know they looked at me like, what is this civilian even asking me? They won't understand what we're doing.
Did you have your cowbell with you? Were you ringing your cowbell?
I said, you're almost there.
You're looking good.
Yeah, you're looking good. It's right around the corner. That's what I said.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. Hey, Corey, let's talk about you've run quite a few events. We talked about some of the self-supported ones that you've done. Let's talk about some of the other events that you've done. And I want to preface this with, I think it was last year you had a goal of running 100 miler every month. Is that correct?
It was.
Or 2 years ago?
I think it was 2 years ago. Yep. Yeah, 2 years.
So how do you come up with the events that you run? Do you look for stuff that's close? I mean, how do you come up with your events that you go after?
A lot of it is logistics and just picking some of the races that are closer to this area. Unfortunately, there are so many great races around here that there's enough to keep me busy. But I also go for scenery, and I'm a sucker for cool views where I can have lots of excuses to take walk breaks with my camera. And so, yeah, that's kind of how I judge it. There are so many great races just in this area. I love the Zion 100 is one of my very favorite races. I had a blast going over toward your way and running Rio mm-hmm. del Lago a couple months ago. The trails over there were beautiful. I had never run in that area before. So,
well, I'm getting more towards the, you know, you've run Badwater. You did the St. George Quad.
Uh-huh.
How does that, are you dreaming and all of a sudden these crazy ideas come to your head? That's or is this from other people that you're running with? How did you decide, I'm going to run the St. George Marathon four times in a row?
I think I had done the St. George Marathon double for a few years, and I knew what to expect with that. And so I thought I would just challenge myself and do it four times. And that's hard because that's a lot of pavement to be running on. But the good thing with that course is that you pass by a place called Veo Pies, and they're famous for having amazing pie. And so that was an awesome.
So that's your motivation
snack.
Is to run by.
It is. Yeah. Here's this little dirty little secret. You can actually stop at Veo Pies and not have to run 100 miler in between. So yeah, you can actually go there without having it be a mid run snack. Yeah, it was. The St. George Marathon is known for being a fast course because it's like steep downhill for most of the way. And the little kicker with doing it four times is that a couple of those times you're running up that hill, which is known for being a steep downhill course.
Chapter 12, I've never seen Breaking Bad. Take us through that chapter a little bit.
Well, I think it goes back to what you were saying earlier, that a lot of times people will say, I wish I could do something like that, but I don't have time. I'm so busy. And I think it's all about priorities. And if something's important to you, then you can make the time. So for me personally, my personal life, I have a job. I'm a social worker, and I have a family and a wife and three kids. And so those things are the priorities. But beyond that, I think running is pretty pretty high up on my priorities list. Running is more of a priority for me than watching TV. So I think a lot of times people will say, I'm so busy, I don't have the time to exercise. But if they were honest and looked at how many hours a week they watch TV or how many hours a week they're on Facebook or whatever, there's time there if you're willing to make it and if you're willing to make some sacrifices and give up a few things, there is time to exercise and run.
So you've run a number of 100-mile runs. How much running do you do to prepare for one of those? When we talk about carving out time, realistically, what are some of the the least amount of time and maybe some of the most amount of time, miles per week, however you want to describe it. If you can find a question in there, please help me out.
Yeah, I gotcha. What does an average week look like with training and building up for a race?
So often we hear, you got to run 100 miles a week, 120 miles a week, because we listen to the elites and think, I want to do it like they're doing it.
Yeah, I don't think that's necessary. And at least for me, that's a recipe for injury if I'm doing crazy mileage like that. So for me personally, I try to get in one long run a week. And I'm fortunate a lot of times with my job, I have a day off during the week. And so my kids will go to school, my wife's at work, and I just treat that as my long run day. So I'm running the whole time from the time my kids are in school to the time they get home. I'm out on the trails, and that's my long run, and it doesn't interfere with the family. If that weren't the case, I would probably be going really early in the morning or at night after the kids went to bed. I've done that many times, and that's okay too. So I try to get that one really quality long run in where I'm out for many hours. And then a couple times a week, I'll just go run for an hour, maybe 2 hours before work, just go really early before everyone's awake. And then on Saturday, I'll maybe run 10 miles. So
let's talk about that family balance and running. How has your family helped in this passion of yours? How do you balance the family life? How do you get them involved?
That's a good question. Thankfully, my family is so supportive, and I'm really lucky. I married a good person who my wife is so supportive. I'll bring up these crazy ideas like, hey, I'm thinking about running a quadruple St. George Marathon on Saturday. Does that work for you? Do we have anything going that day, or will that be okay? And so she's still awesome with that. But I also try to balance and give back what I'm taking. So I try to spend a lot of time with the family. And one of the great things that I heard from one of my kids, I thought this was a sign that I was doing something right. We were talking about how it's important to get exercise and stay healthy. And one of my kids said, well, yeah, but you don't do that. You hardly ever run. And that week I had done 60 miles. And so I thought, okay, that's awesome. If my running is having that little impact, that's how I want it to be. If they don't even know. And that's okay. Cause I definitely do not want to be the person who is so focused on belt buckles that my family is a mess. So to me, running isn't that important. I think it's still important to keep the family as a priority, and a belt buckle isn't worth ruining that.
You know, you described life balance or family balance in a way that I really hadn't thought about it before. And I don't know how I had really thought about it, but you said, I want to give back what I've taken. And that is a great way to quantify it. If I've taken this, now how can I now bring something back or contribute in ways that are measurable? And there's a sense of, I've just taken a weekend, I need to give a weekend. I've just taken this. I want to generate some activity that really pays that back in a way that's impactful. So, I think life, health balance, work balance, we talk about these things, but with the family of giving back what you have obviously removed from that in some way to quantify it. So I liked that metaphor or that visual that you created when you made that statement.
Thanks.
So your kids have grown up their formative years watching you do these crazy things. How do you, you know, I think about this a lot, you know, what lessons can I teach my kids that I've learned by running these? Mm-hmm. Have you ever thought of that, Corey, and you have ever had discussions with your kids about what you've gone through running?
I think about that all the time, actually. Mm-hmm. I think it's so great that on quite a few of the races, my kids have come out and maybe stopped at an aid station to say hello, or they'll be at the finish line to cheer me on. But what I really like is when they see the times when I'm struggling and having a hard time, and I think it's good for them to see that it's okay to struggle, and that doesn't mean you have to give up. Mm-hmm. So I think that's an important lesson for kids to see, that you got to work hard for the things that matter to you, and just because something is hard doesn't mean you have to quit. So I hope that my kids see that really you can accomplish what you put your mind to, and I hope that's a lesson they take with them.
And to that point, so much is learned from observation and from modeling, and so not having that heart-to-heart, face-to-face discussion about don't quit. I mean, I think we're just setting that example by doing. Mm-hmm. So kids are pretty smart.
I think it's important for our kids to know that life is not all rainbows and unicorns, right?
Yeah.
They need to see that life is a struggle at times, and they need to see good examples of how to get through that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so true.
You know, as we thumb through the book here, Corey, the pictures are as brilliant as the writing. And as I look at this one, chapter 16, you're sitting there with this queen that you can see through,
yep,
wrapped around you in the middle of what looks like a road, or on the side of a road. And it says, "Mosquitoes sucked out my dignity."
Yes.
What in the heck?
I'm trying to think what the distance was on that run. I think I was out for a 20 or 30 miler, and so I was going in the evening, and it was raining outside, and so I didn't think to put on bug spray. I don't know. I am a mosquito magnet. They love me, and I just get hundreds of mosquito bites, but I didn't think to put on bug spray because it was raining outside, and so I put a little poncho in my pack just in case it started to rain really hard. So I had been running for maybe an hour, and I was over by these farm fields, and when I got over there, it stopped raining, and the mosquitoes in this area are just horrific. They are just so horrible, and so I started feeling some bites on my legs. I'm like, oh no, uh-oh, this is not good. I need to run faster so they don't catch me. And so I started running faster, and I'm breathing harder. And then I started feeling that they were sucking my blood through my shirt. Like I could feel them on my back. They were going through my clothes. And so I thought, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? So I sprinted harder, and I'm thinking, I can't do this too much longer. I'm not this fast. And so, but I didn't want to stop and pull out my phone and call my wife. And so I just kept running. And then I took my headphones out, and I could hear, it was like a swarm of hornets. And I thought, oh no, I'm dead. They're going to eat me. And so I called my wife and I said, please help. You've got to come and get me. I'm going to have hundreds of mosquito bites. And she said, well, do you have your poncho? And I said, yeah, but that's not going to help me at all. Like, that doesn't cover my legs. And she said, well, just sit down on the road and put the poncho over you and just cover yourself. And I thought, oh no, that is going to look so ridiculous. But I didn't know what else to do. And so I sat down on the side of the road and put this poncho over me. And she said, I'll come and bring you some bug spray. So I'm just sitting there with this queen over me and just praying, please, please do not let someone drive past, please. And after a while, I hear this car coming and I'm thinking, oh, please let this be my wife. And then I see that it's not. It's this lady, and she drove past, and I thought, I'm so thankful that she didn't stop. And then I see her flip around and come back, and she said, are you okay? And I said, yeah, I'm fine. I'm just getting eaten by mosquitoes. My wife's coming. And so it was a half hour before my wife got there. And so the chapter is kind of about how she pulls up and sees this pathetic sight of her husband sitting on the side of the road covered in plastic. And those mosquito bites, those mosquitoes sucked out my blood and my dignity.
Okay. I learned something about the Reese family in this story. That's very important. First of all, Melanie is a supporter of Corey and his desire to run, because
Yes. The
first thing she could have said is, I'll be right there to pick you up. She didn't say that. She said, I'll be right there to bring you some bug spray.
That's right. Yep. Yeah.
You don't have to come home. You just need some bug spray.
I love that. And I don't want you to show the example to our children that mosquitoes beat you.
That's right. How come you're home early, Dad? These little bugs.
Right.
Bad water wasn't enough to beat them down. No. Running through the mountains through the middle of the night? No. Mosquitoes.
Those darn mosquitoes.
You know, the title of the book, Nowhere Near First, and you know, as you think about the people up front or in the mid-pack or in the back of the pack, all of the hardship and the struggles are the same. And whether you're in the back, middle, or front, each one of these topics applies to you. Mm-hmm. And each one of these experiences, whether it's going out too fast and spreading the peanut butter, whether it's, you know, trying to negotiate, you know, family balance and time. Everything fits within our community, and it doesn't matter who or your speed. And that's one thing I think that provides some cohesiveness in our community.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this book applies to just about anybody that runs.
You know, and I think that it comes to one of near the beginning of the book where Corey talks about why he likes trail running, and he equates it to humorously to his mother-in-law's meatloaf, and has ingredients of why he likes trail running. And I read these and I thought, that is what these are, the three ingredients that are on the top of my list of why I like this. One is the scenery.
Yeah.
You don't get that from your couch.
There's a lot of views that are reserved for those that take up the challenge to do.
It is true. The reward is high. The second ingredient is the uncertainty. To your point, Don, at the beginning, there you have to take a chance. You have to be willing to risk something. And that uncertainty is something that I personally just love. And the third part, which Corey just talked about, is the people that you can meet, that you can learn from. And I think that that's a really three good ingredients for meatloaf.
Yes.
Have you ever taken some of your mother-in-law's meatloaf in your drop bag?
That's one I haven't added to my pack yet.
You
no,
should try
I,
that.
I haven't tried that one.
We have a good friend that runs around here locally that uses McDonald's cheeseburgers.
Bill Carr. Yeah, let's go ahead and drop his name.
Yeah,
he
gets those the night before and puts them in Ziploc baggies and uses them the next day for nutrition on the trail. So I think meatloaf, and in fact, if you do it right, you could probably put in a little Ziploc and use it as goo a little bit, you know, a little. Have a little viscosity.
I'm going to ask this question to Scott, Corey, and then it's coming to you.
Uh-oh. Why are you so stupid?
No. No. How has ultra running made you a better person?
That's a good question. I think it's part of who I am. So I don't know I can't picture myself as a non-runner.
Has it morphed you into something different, or has it allowed you to express who you really are in a bigger way?
I'm a very, very, or I used to be a very impatient person, and had tendencies to complain.
Yeah,
I think trail running has rounded those edges, so that I am a little more patient. And I was reminded today, actually, I was on a phone call with a former employee, and he was talking. He says, you know, one thing that we've missed is your positivity.
Hmm.
And I thought, boy, I don't know if I really would have labeled myself as someone that's real positive, but I find that I look for the good things. Back to that the video that we mentioned a couple podcasts ago by Jocko Willink.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the good video.
Yeah, right.
Things can be terrible. And he says, as long as if you can pronounce the word good, then you still have some more fight in you. And I think that's two ways that trail running, ultra running has changed my personality.
Yeah, that's a great answer. Great answer. How about you, Corey?
You got to beat that answer, Corey. Go.
That's a tough one to beat. Yeah. The thing I was thinking is, a few weeks ago we were in Florida and we went to NASA and we were listening to some of the presentations that astronauts had made and how they got to the moon and how they launched satellites and everything. And one of the astronauts who had walked on the moon said, don't ever let anyone tell you that something is impossible, because nothing is impossible. I have walked on the moon. Like, anything is possible. I think that's something that I've learned with the trail and ultra running, is that really anything is possible, because I have run a 100-miler, and if that can happen, then I still think that's a miracle. So I think I've tried to incorporate that anything is possible, and I can do what I set my mind to, and I think that's true for all of us.
How about you, Don?
Well, the third guy doesn't have a chance. I mean, two good answers and it's left to me. I just think it's made me happy. You know, I've enjoyed the relationships that I've made. It's added in a different dimension to this experience on life. I've run out there on the trails like we all have, and it's not far from the freeway, and it's not far from communities and stoplights, yet I'm a million miles away from that. And what a great escape. And I've often thought, people are sleeping right now and we're out here doing this, and they don't even know what's out here. It's like a secret place. And it just brings me happiness. And so and when you look back and you're all done and they're going to throw some dirt on you and you're laying there in however state you're in, I'm going to look back on it and think, doggone it, I'm glad I didn't miss out on that. That was a wonderful, wonderful experience and opportunity to get to do that with those people.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Hey, one thing that some people may or may not know about Corey is he is quite the pianist and composer. In fact, we're going to close out the show with one of his songs. Corey, tell us how playing the piano and ultra running are similar.
I didn't see that question. If I knew that question was coming, Corey, I would have tipped you off before the podcast. That's a good one, Scott.
That is a tough one. You know,
you get blisters on your fingers. I mean,
you got to pace yourself. You can't start. Do
you get cramps? Do you have to hydrate?
You can't start off too fast. You got to spread that music so that there's still notes left at the end.
That's right. You don't want to run out at the first of the song.
Like, what the heck? You've got like,
there's only so many keys.
You've got 2 minutes at the end where I hear nothing.
The piano playing came to me a lot like the running did, where I didn't start playing the piano until I was older. I think I was 19 when I first started playing the piano.
Wow.
and just kind of taught myself and never took any lessons, and just kind of, it was just something that I was passionate about and wanted to learn how to do. And that's really exactly what happened with running. I didn't do it when I was younger. I had no interest, and somewhere along the way there was that spark there, and when there's that spark, then you want to have that interest to pursue it. So that's really how the whole piano playing started.
You know, that's interesting. And it goes back to your comment, Corey, that if you want to do something, anything's possible. For someone to pick up the piano when you're 19 and be able to play like you'll hear at the end of this podcast, the way Corey does. And by the way, all of his stuff, I think all your stuff is on Spotify. You can go test that out and listen to some of his stuff. It's amazing. I'm really impressed. So my next question for you is, what is your next big thing that you want to do that is going to take a lot of time and effort? Or is piano playing and composing and running take up all your time? What's next?
Breaking Bad. I recommend you watch Breaking Bad. Great show.
By the way, you can do that while running on the treadmill.
Yeah. There you go. Kill two birds with one stone.
Have you done a 100-mile treadmill run, Corey? Have you run 100 miles on a treadmill? I challenge you to see if you can get that done before Breaking Bad is over. Can you do it within
the whole series?
The whole series. Ooh. I have to do some math on that.
That's a good challenge. I've never done a 100-miler on a treadmill. That sounds tough. A few weeks ago, I did a marathon. That was the longest I'd ever done, and that was really hard.
We could get a leaping picture on that treadmill.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Okay, so what's next? That was the question that we're looking for an answer.
Gosh, I always have so many ideas running through my brain. I've always got music that ideas for music and new albums and music is a lot easier on your body than going out and running. So I'm sure I've got a few ideas for some CDs that I'll work on. And then with the running, I'm planning to do the Zion 100. Oh, I guess I've got one before then. In a few weeks, I'm doing the Jackpot 48-hour race, and then Zion, and then Lake Sonoma is a week after Zion 100. So I'm interested to see how that goes, running a 100-miler and then 6 or 7 days later doing a 50-miler. That'll be tricky, I think.
Yeah, and that's a tough course. That isn't an easy one. You don't find a lot of mountains there, but at the end of the day, you've covered a lot of elevation. It's a good one. It'll test you.
I'm excited.
So the book is called Nowhere Near First. It is available at most of your book retailers, including Amazon. You can also go to Corey's blog, which is fastcorey.com. There's a lot of good articles there. You can, I'm sure there's a link to your book there somewhere. I don't see it right offhand, but I'm sure you can get it from there also.
Yeah.
Hey, Corey, we'd love to talk to you. We'd love to see your jumping photos. Keep those up.
You can also find him on Ultra Running Magazine. He's a contributing author there, an editor, or an author rather, and so he can be found.
Well, thank you, guys. I've listened to your podcast since I very first started running on the trails, and it's been a great resource. You guys are awesome.
And now you're making us feel old, my goodness. Now go out and listen to Corey's music.
Moss.